This is The Fix-It Show on WTMJ. Advice and opinions expressed during the program are solely that of the hosts or guests and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC.
Need help around the house? Even the handiest do-it-yourselfer needs an extra hand sometimes.
You fix it!
During The Fix-It Show on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome to the show. Another Saturday, in fact, the last Saturday of June, and David Nason's just skipping out of town. Jim Riedel in for him. How are you, sir?
I am good. How are you, Dayton?
It's been a while since you've been on the show.
Yeah, I think the last time I guest hosted, you weren't here. So you were both gone. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You and Libby did the show.
Yes, yes.
That's right.
Yes,
so.
And this is probably, I think I've guest hosted about, this is about the sixth time maybe over the last year and a half, 2 years.
All right, well, remind.
This might be the first time that there wasn't a guest on.
Right, so for 2 hours, we're doing nothing.
So I got to bring the game today.
Nothing but answering questions that people text in or call in, or otherwise we're just going to gab. We're just going to hang out.
Yeah, I got all sorts of stuff I can talk. I got a whole new radio concept that's going to go on the hour right before this. It's the Break It Show. So that David can talk about fixing the stuff we talk about breaking.
You're going to come in and break stuff, and then he's going to tell us how to fix it. Hey, that's not a bad idea.
I kind of like it, yeah.
I like it. So tell people why you would be filling in for David. What's your background?
Okay, so my original background, I was born in Milwaukee, raised in Milwaukee. Technically, I think I live within 6 miles of where I first was ever born. Never farther away than six miles from where I was born. On the north side of Milwaukee. So I've been in Milwaukee my whole life. David and I met because I worked at Kelman Corporation, was a restoration company. When I started, it was more construction. We did remodeling, a lot of remodeling, residential, commercial, schools, church stuff. And then we got into a lot of insurance restoration after that.
Okay.
And someone left the company and David came in to fill that role. David did the expensive architectural training. He went to UWM for 5 years and was going to be an architect. And so he did that. But my background was I did the cheap architectural training. I went to MATC for the 2-year program. And I did that as I started working at Kelman. So I was working in the summers and then I went to school and worked part time. And I technically started out washing trucks on Saturdays there.
Okay.
And I ended up being there for 21 years, which was about half my life at the time when I left, about 20 years ago now. So I was reflecting how old I am as David said, well, you're going to have to probably say a little bit about yourself. So I was thinking about that. So I've known David for 25, 30 years now. And, when I left, I went on and did some things with starting a garage, organizing business, and we stayed in touch. And then he left Kelman, and he went back, and then he left again. And I had thought about being a home inspector years before that. He ended up doing it before I ever did it, but I ended up going the route of being a realtor, which I was for. I did that in 2013, I believe, and did that for about 10 years. I'm not technically licensed anymore. But he and I stayed in touch because when he became a home inspector, I just recommended him because I knew I could trust him.
Sure, sure.
And so he and I stayed in touch. So he knows that I know a lot of stuff. I always say because he's a young lad that I taught him everything he knows, even though you know he knows a lot on his own.
Was he like 2 years younger than you?
Probably about 4 or 5.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
So we've got real estate, we've got garage organization, we've got restoration, we've got remodeling.
Yeah.
So pretty much, how about electrical? You know anything about that?
Well, actually, yes. I have a friend who's an electrician, and when I left Kelman, I went to work somewhere else, and it didn't work out. It was a very short duration, and so he said, I'm really busy, come and help me. So actually, I've been helping him on and off with things for almost 20 years, and he and I actually flipped houses together. That was one of the reasons I became a realtor. So I have this pretty extensive, wide background. I have done, if it was from below the footing of the house, I've dug underneath footings in houses all the way up to putting a cap on a chimney. I have pretty much done
all
just
right.
about anything. Now, I may have only done it once, but I have done pretty much anything you could possibly do in a house.
All right, so there's Jim's background. Like we said, no guests today, so we need you guys to participate. 855-616-1620 is the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. Get your calls in, get your texts in. We're fixing stuff because it's a fix-it show on WTMJ. You know I said
it, I am better now. From a leaky pipe to finishing your basement, the fix-it show on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. Much appreciated. 855-616-1620 is the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. If you have questions for me, Dayton Kane, or Jim over there sitting in for David Nason, we probably can answer pretty much anything that comes in.
We'll, or we can make some
or we'll up. Make it up, and we'll sound confident when we do. Now, Isaac's in the producer's booth, so if you call in, he'll be the one picking up the phone and getting you ready to go on air with us. So get that in. First question came in. It says, question about the responsibilities of the home inspector. Situation, I'm selling a property, and buyer arranged for a home inspection. Pretty typical thing to happen. After his report was issued, buyer filed a formal notice of defect and informally requested a price reduction in lieu of me curing the defects. Buyer indicated request for price reduction was made based on advice from the home inspector. I have no problem with this report, but giving buyer advice to request purchase price reduction seems beyond the scope of his job. Opinion, please.
Yes, there's a lot in there. When I was a realtor and I had buyers, we'd hire oftentimes David because I knew David. So David would come in and do a home inspection, and they do their job. They say, this looks good. This looks good, marginal. This looks okay. And here's something that I'm going to call out as a defect. So the way that home inspectors generally operate is they'll say, I am pointing this out to you. What you do with this information is between you and your seller. And the way you're going to decide on that is with the advice of your agent who represents you. Your agent wrote your offer to purchase. Your agent is in the contract negotiations with the seller and the seller's agent. So they're the ones that need to guide you on what's the best decision for you. Because there's money decisions that a home inspector will never know about, you know, in the offer. There's all sorts of things that, that go on in those offers. So what happens in those, when you're in a home inspection, there's an awful lot of conversation that comes up. And it comes up about an item of the house or a system of the house or that. And that's a lot of the dialogue that a home inspector ends up talking with that buyer. But there's also dialogue that comes up with the realtor when the realtor's there, and it can become a group conversation and a lot of things can be said. So it may not have been the home inspector that actually recommended that to this particular buyer, but it may have been a situation where in the past I've heard of people taking something and requesting a credit instead of having the seller buy this or fix this. When I was a realtor, because of my background, I often would try to negotiate something for the buyer because I felt more comfortable advising my buyer to fix the things after they obtained the home and did it under their control than counting on the seller to do it in a fashion that would be acceptable.
Right.
Because what's acceptable to a seller isn't always acceptable to a buyer. So a seller may fix something and the seller will say, that doesn't look fixed to me. And so it creates a whole nother aspect of contract problems and maybe potential delays in a closing because the buyer will end up going back to look at it. And it's usually only a day or two before the closing. And now it's way too late to like resolve it.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
And so that's just one aspect of it. But a lot of times those discussions get a little bit more involved where everybody's talking and it may be, well, and I've heard in the past somebody would maybe ask for a credit for this instead of having them do it. I don't necessarily think that's outside the realm of a home inspector. The home inspector isn't the one that's supposed to guide them in saying you should have them give you a credit. I don't think most home inspectors would say that.
David likes to say that when he's there, he's giving you a snapshot of a moment in time of that house.
Correct.
Facts. That's all he's giving is facts. This is what I see. This is what's going on with the house. Here's the information. Thank you very much.
And some of those things, the seller, quite frankly, may not even know existed. And that's why home inspectors are involved because home inspector, you know, a seller is supposed to disclose everything that they know about that is a defect. But the unfortunately, contract language is such that, and they changed some things in the last few years that I was a realtor about what a defect is and what home inspectors are required to do. I know David's talked about that at times. And it's very confusing on what a defect really is, especially with the changed language, because in a way they tried to simplify it. They wanted to standardize it and say it has to fit these parameters to be a defect so that every home inspector would look at the same thing and call the same defect out all the time. Because in the past, home inspectors had a little more leeway. One would say, I'm calling that as a defect. And another agent or another home inspector would say, I'm not calling that a defect, but I'm calling this a defect. So they had differing opinions. And so the language was changed in the law that was supposed to try to make it more uniform so things would become more more standard, I guess, is how they looked at it and what they looked at and what they how they categorized it. It still can be confusing, and what someone says is a defect isn't necessarily what someone else might say. The defect part, really, they changed it to be where it's primarily like a safety problem. If this isn't fixed, repaired, replaced, it would cause a health harm or hurt. And in the past, before that language, a defect could have been something that wouldn't necessarily harm something. It was just really not right, you know, and if it could get worse. It was, the language was, if it wasn't repaired, it could get worse. So, well, that's a lot of things. It kind of left it wide open. Right. So the language changed, and I'll leave it up to David to say if he likes it better that way and if he thinks it's better that. I think, my personal opinion is sometimes I think it can be a reason why the home inspectors don't call something as a defect when maybe they should.
So you point it out, but you can't call it a defect based on the language that's in the way the code is written up for the inspectors now.
And even people that don't know things about houses, I mean, when you'd take a home buyer through. You point some out to them, they're like, that doesn't look right to me. They might not know what right looks like, but they sometimes will say, that doesn't. And so they kind of have an idea of what things are good and bad, but you don't always see that stuff.
Great question. Thanks for the conversation. 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited WTMJ Talk and Text Line. Get your questions in about anything when it comes to fixing your home, because it's a Fix It Show on WTMJ.
Now, back to the Fix-It Show on 620 WTMJ.
I like that sound. This is Alley Eyes. Alley Eyes is going to be playing Summerfest today. It's the second weekend of Summerfest. Have you been there yet, Jim?
I was there the night before. I saw Garth Brooks.
Okay, yeah, I was at that same show, but we didn't run into each other.
No.
What'd you think of Garth Brooks? Had you seen him before, first of all?
I've never seen him before. I actually only really learned about him because I got married to my wife, who really got into country music in the 90s.
Yeah, well, that's
so Garth
when
Brooks
he was
huge then, and so she was a big fan. And when he retired, she had not seen him before that, and he came back like 3-4 years ago. And the tickets were really expensive, and so we didn't go then. And now he came back, and I just thought we should see him before we don't have a chance. So we got some tickets on, you know, aftermarket, got in just in time. And he was an hour late.
You know why I think that was? Because he didn't have an opening act, so they didn't want it to end. If he would have come out right away, we would have all been going home at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, seemed like a lot of people were still coming in.
I think that's the other reason, you know, too.
And the weather was a little foggy-ish and a little damp that night. But
I saw, when I went to the show, I said, Now, I had seen Garth Brooks when he was at the Bradley Center years, like 15 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, 10 years ago-ish. And it was inside. He had all his lights and all his, you know, his normal Garth Brooks stuff when you think of it. When you went to this show, I said, well, my wife had never seen him. I'm like, well, you got to see Garth Brooks, but you didn't get to see Garth Brooks.
Yeah, right.
Like,
right.
None of us did. If you didn't see him in the 90s and you're seeing him today, you're not seeing what made him the phenomenon that he is. He played all his great songs, and it was good music, but...
Someone was mad that afterwards that he didn't play one of his songs.
He didn't play a lot. He's got so many songs.
Yeah, he played all his classic stuff, but the guy was mad he didn't play Outside the Fire.
Oh. He didn't play a lot of songs because he's got too many to. Well, he could have played for 3 hours, but it was only like 90 minutes. It was
Yeah.
Anyway, so how do we fix Garth Brooks' next show? It's a fix-it show. What do we do?
Fireworks.
Yeah, we were missing that.
Pyromatics, you know.
More lights going.
He sure had a lot of people. I mean, I think I counted 12 people on stage with him. So he had a lot of musicians and singers. The backup singers, they were great.
I heard the reason he was even here is because his manager came to Summerfest a few years ago and really loved Summerfest.
Oh, okay.
So they've been trying to get him at Summerfest, and they just couldn't make it work.
Yeah.
So they ended up putting these two shows right before Summerfest.
He actually sounded...
At least that's the story that's out there.
He sounded pretty good, though. I was worried that, you know, maybe his voice wasn't going to be...
He was a little winded at times.
Yeah,
but otherwise,
he got to
good.
Stop anytime he wanted because the crowd was singing every song of his...
Yeah.
I mean, almost every one, the crowd was just singing. It was pretty fun.
You know what I did like about the show? I didn't have the guy behind me just talking through the whole show. You ever been to one of those concerts where somebody's just next to you talking? It's like, go outside. Enjoy the concert.
I usually only went to hard rock concerts, so you didn't hear anybody... Except the band.
So if you're listening to the Fix-It show right now and you're like, why are they not talking about fixing things? It's because you're not asking us questions. So 855-616-1620. That is a Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. We'd love to hear from you. Get those in. But now we go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center with Elizabeth Lintonen. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Dayton.
This is the Fix-It show on 620 WTMJ.
I love this time of year, Summerfest going on. We get to play different music from different artists. This is The Movement, reggae band, as you can tell, from Columbia, South Carolina. Not from Columbia, but Columbia, South Carolina. Isaac picking out the tunes for us today. We appreciate that. If you want to participate, 855-616-1620 is the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. We had somebody asking about what inspectors can and can't do or shouldn't do when it comes to inspections. Let's talk about you were a realtor for 10 years, you said, plus.
Yeah.
Some little things that you can do when you're going to sell your house that make it more appealing. And I got a list here, and I want you to tell me how important you think they are. Trim overgrown trees and shrubs.
Correct.
Easy fix, right?
Easy.
Just get out there, make them look nice, shapely, not crazy, not up against the house.
If it looks, the first image of the house, when they approach it. Obviously, they look at stuff online, but when they approach the house, they'll look at stuff, and you can get an instant idea: did this person maintain this house? Does it look good? Is it well maintained? And the first thing you see is overgrown bushes and things that hide features of the house or make it. Well, where's the front door? I've seen houses like that, and it's like, why didn't they take care of this?
Yeah, right. Okay, speaking of front door, updating the front door. Now, that's not a cheap venture these days. New doors are not $100 anymore.
No.
But they say that if you put a new door in, you get your money back because it helps sell the house.
Yeah, and well, yes, I believe that's true. Doors have gotten very expensive, but there's an awful lot of nice features about the new modern door. I mean, 20, 40 years ago, you had like three options. You know, that's just what everybody was buying. Now, the front door, I think people have put more of an emphasis on the front door that they want it to be a very welcoming and very appealing look. So now you got fiberglasses that have wood grain, you got, you know, pre-finished that look like, you know, nice stained wood, and it's steel. I mean, there's all sorts of options, and you can spend a lot of money on it, but I think it's the front door, and sometimes you don't have to spend a lot, you just have to paint it. I mean, if I had another realtor that I worked with, she knew I was very handy. She said, hey, can you, I helped her out with a couple of small things through the years, because she knew she was having a hard time finding somebody to do some small stuff. And she said, hey, I got this front door, and it needs a little bit of work on it. And it was a six-panel door, so it was all fitted together. It was coming apart a little bit, and the panels moved. And I was able to repair that, and we just refinished and did a little bit of a touch-up on it, and it made a world of difference.
Like you said, when you pull up, you get your first impression of what am I looking at? But then the second impression is opening that door and going in, right? So
right.
If it's falling off the hinges, if it's dragging on the floor, that's an impression you're making right off the bat.
Yeah, and again, it comes down to they get an impression of what did these people maintain the house and what other problems might the house have? Because you want, as a seller, you want it. I mean, way back when, the guy that trained me in real estate had been around a long time. You know, the average time a house was on the market would be like months.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and
not anymore,
many of the years that I was a realtor, it was sold the first day. Sometimes it's hard to even get it on the market without it already being sold. So, you know, that's the thing about real estate. Things change over time and how the market reacts change. You know, is it a buyer's market, seller's market? The trends about the house and what people like change. So,
sure.
So, you know, realtors, that's one of the things you, as a realtor, when you're in the office, you hear a lot about other houses that other agents have and what did they do with them. And so you really see trends like wallpaper is real easy. Nobody liked wallpaper. Well, actually, wallpaper was kind of making a comeback the last couple of years that I was in it. So I'm not sure if people like it now because it's been a few years, but those are the things that the agents also help guide you on. But yeah, you want to, when you walk in, you want it to be clean and looks good.
Yeah. Painting, you mentioned painting a door, but if there's a room that's a little outdated or very bright color that right. you liked, but the average person may be right. like, whoa, just paint right. it to a neutral. Yet it is like.
If it's a kid's room and they had like their favorite sports team color in there, you might leave that and let the next buyer right. decide if they want to keep it or not. But the main living areas you want them to be. And sometimes paint just looks duller, looks marked up, and so a fresh coat of paint really makes it look good.
Replacing outdated light fixtures?
Yes.
Yes.
We had, I had a friend I was selling their house, and it went on the market, and they didn't do a lot of to the house when they owned it. They didn't live there forever. It was like a 10-year, 12-year time frame because it was two families coming together, and they needed the large house with the bedrooms and whatnot. So they didn't do a lot to fix up the house, but we weren't getting an offer on it. And so we took a weekend that it was slow. We actually did some painting in some rooms, and we replaced all the registers. We replaced all the switch covers and outlet covers. Hmm. We replaced light fixtures. And within a week, we got an offer. That's all we did.
Interesting. Get rid of distinct odors.
Absolutely. So, you know, there's people who are cat people and they like their cats. There are people who hate cats. And, you know, like that is probably one of the most prominent type of odors you'll find in a house is pet odors.
Yeah.
So if you have pets and you've had them for a long time, you're acclimated to how the house smells. But someone with a fresh scent of, you know.
How as a realtor address that? Because you'll walk into the house because they want you to help sell yeah. it, and you maybe they don't smell it anymore because they've lived there their whole right. lives. Do you say, we got to get somebody in here to clean?
It can be a tough conversation to have. Yeah. You have to, as an agent, you generally are going to approach that delicately. But sometimes being very blunt is just the best way to do it. You know, agents have different approaches. Somebody has a real strong personality, and they'll walk in and say, "You gotta do something about this." And other agents will be kind of tiptoeing around it. You know, because you don't really, you never want to offend anybody. You know, it's their life and what they're interested in. So, you know, you have to be careful. But at some point, you gotta probably say you're probably accustomed to what it smells like. But have someone that you know, a friend, a relative who doesn't have pets, come in and tell you.
Yeah.
And see what they say. And maybe sometimes the relative or friend isn't the best one because they don't want to offend their friends either.
Right. Because they're going to be around for a long time, whereas the realtor wants the transactions done.
Right.
Last one here is declutter and deep clean the house. Obviously, the less stuff that's around in the way, the more people can envision them living in the house instead of you living in the house.
The common thread there was we don't want the buyers to see what your interests are in the house. We want them to see the house. So take right. the stuff that is your stuff, your collections of things, and pack them up now, get them out of there. Because what somebody likes as Hummels, you know, the next person will hate it. And the funny thing is, you never know what's going to turn somebody off. It's weird. You really get to know people when you're a realtor because you hear a lot of things. And so it's like, really, you're not going to put an offer in because of that? You know, it's like, the house is great. Who cares? They're going to take that with them. You know, that's the kind of conversation sometimes realtors have. You know, that's like any industry. I was thinking about that on the drive in. Like, we talk to remodelers here on the show, you know, and behind the scenes, every remodeler, I'm sure you've had it where you work with the siding, you talk about customers who are just like off the wall, crazy situations. It's like, we go through a lot behind the scenes sometimes as realtors and as contractors that the average Joe doesn't sure. know about. And, you know, those are our horror stories that we keep to ourselves usually. But.
All right. Keep the questions coming. 855-616-1620 is the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. We have a roof question we'll get to when we come back. It is the Fix-It Show.
It's the Fix-It Show, exclusively on 620 WTMJ.
The Aurora Pavilion today at Summerfest. If you want to see the Mariachi Sol de what?
De Mexico.
De Mexico. Mariachi Sol de Mexico going to be there. There are 3 days. Well, you missed Thursday and Friday, so today. You can get to Summerfest yet, and then it's back next weekend, of course. Dayton Kane here with Jim Riedel. David Nason taking a break this weekend. Did he say we could say where he was? I don't remember.
I don't know, but
he's sailing. He did say that last week.
Yeah, I'm curious if he would like it to be 95, like next week, and sailing across Michigan, or like today where it's cool. I wonder what's better on a sailboat. No,
today's not going to be horrible. Sunny and 72. That's not bad. But overnight, it was in the 50s, and we're sailing overnight. So
yeah, it'll be cold on the water.
It would have been cold out there, yeah. So let's talk about this caller that has an interesting question. Good morning, Craig from Sussex. What's your question?
We bought a new front door last year and had it installed. And within about 3 months, the corner of the window insert, there's kind of a semicircular window on top, out the corner that had basically melted from the heat because it faces the west. And apparently the storm door was acting as kind of a magnifying glass. So they did replace the window, but they told us, that's it, we won't replace it again. And other than keeping the storm door screen open, I'm wondering, I've read about some, like, I guess, plastic wrap that you can put over the window to try to reflect the heat. Is that something that may work?
Sure.
Otherwise, I have to keep my storm door open year-round.
Right, like one of those tinted films that you can put on it is what you're saying. Yeah, so when I sell a door, in my program, if I have a dark, what color is your door?
It's that kind of a dark brown.
Yeah, so when we build a dark door, dark brown, dark blue, black, and then we go to put a storm door on it, our system tells us you need a tinted glass on this storm door or it's going to overheat the space. And because that sun is coming in, it's getting trapped. It's trying to get to that dark color, right? And now that inside between those two doors is overheating and it's melting the glue out of your window is what it sounds like. So, unfortunately, there's two options there. Three, take the storm door off altogether. Leave it open a crack so that can vent and you can get that heat from in there, or try to find some kind of tinting that you can put on there, which should do it. If you can do it on the inside of the window, obviously better than having it on the outside where it's going to get weathered. But, unfortunately, that is an issue. And
they sell those films, and they're oftentimes they're like reflective or they look a little mirror-like, and they're not hard to put on. Here's a suggestion for you. You could try one of those. I think they even sell it at most home stores. And take a little portable thermometer and stick it inside there. Maybe you can like Velcro it or tape it to the door a little bit higher up and see what the temperature is like before you put the film on and then put it in there and you maybe can gauge with the what the temperature will be reading and do a comparison, like the same kind of day, same kind of temperature, to compare the two readings and see, does that help you? And you'll know then, I think, a little bit better if it's going to be a long-term solution for you.
I also want to add that this is a summer issue, right? So when you have the summer, keep it open a crack. There's a screen there, right? So leave that top part open a little bit, even the bottom one, if you can do both, just to get that air circulating through there. In the winter, you're not going to have this problem. It's going to be cold enough. It's not going to heat
usually
up.
That,
so
I would agree that's a pretty.
But yes, you're right. It is an issue, unfortunately, Craig.
Yeah, that door does get awfully hot in the wintertime, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I suppose the way it's facing it does.
Thing.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
All right, well, hopefully you can find some of that film, and that should help the situation, I would think.
I am in the parking lot as we speak of a major place. Right. So,
well, have a great
look. Thanks much.
Have a great
appreciate
weekend.
It.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in. 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. We have some texts we'll get to, including that one about the roof, when we come back, because it is a Fix-It show on WTMJ.
Making sure your honey-do list doesn't turn into a honey-what-did-you-do list. It's the Fix-It Show on 620 WTMJ.
This is probably my least favorite song on the radio right now. But it won a Grammy, so who am I to say, right? Audrey Nuna, who is part of the Demon Hunters group, is going to be at the T-Mobile stage tonight at Summerfest. So you could hear that song, I'm sure, being played. So if you're a fan of that or your kids are a fan of that, head on down to Summerfest. Dayton Kane here with Jim Riedel in for David Nason. Each week we're sponsored by J&B Construction and Siding Unlimited. Let's get to some of these texts here. What causes a wavy roof? The roof is only about 5 years old and the attic has zero leaks or problems. Well, I would kind of say you do have a problem probably going on here. One of two things. It was either installed properly. The shingles weren't laid out flat enough when it started. But if it was flat when it started, you probably have a ventilation issue that you need to have checked out. Because what causes that is the heat getting trapped up in your attic and it has nowhere to go out properly, or not enough ventilation to get it out properly, or not enough intake where it's not bringing in enough air to be able to get out. So I would have like a Wisconsin Home Improvement over to check out your ventilation would be my first step. If that all checks out, then I'd be going back to the roofing company and asking them, hey, what's going on here? You need to reinstall my roof or look at my roof and figure out what's going on.
Well, there's been manufacturer defects at times, too. So maybe, you know, investigate what could be a warranty issue there for one. But, yeah, the heat issue is probably the biggest thing. I've been on roofs where it's actually cool outside, but the sun is hitting it, and you go up to the top, and there's a ridge vent on it, and the heat is just pouring out of those things. And that means that there's good airflow coming in from the bottom edge of the roof and following underneath the roof surface in the attic and coming up to the top, and then the heat expels out. And if you don't have that good airflow like that, like Dayton said, it could be overheating. The whole roof structure is just getting hot, and the shingles aren't handling it well.
I don't know. Like on a day today, it's going to be 72 and sunny. Beautiful day.
Yeah.
You go up on that roof, you're at 90, 100 degrees up there compared to 72 down on the ground. It gets hot.
You can't even kneel down or put your hand on the surface.
Get off my ladder, I'll put my hand on a roof, and
yeah, it'll burn.
It burns. So it does definitely get hot up there, but I think I would have my ventilation on that checked. That'd be my first guess. Okay, let's go to another one here at 855-616-1620. We were talking before about somebody, pet odors and things like this. This happened to us. We had our house on the market. A potential buyer was coming to look at it and saw our cat in the window. She wouldn't even come in. Perhaps it would be a good idea to maybe put your cat somewhere else just to prevent this from happening. I think so. I think pets in general, if you have people coming to look at your house, your dog shouldn't be there, your cat shouldn't be there.
Yeah, some people are allergic, so it's good to keep them out. And,
yeah.
And a lot of times buyers will ask, do these people have pets? Because I'm going to come in there and I'm allergic or my child's allergic. And so sometimes that information is shared ahead of time, so that can help buyers.
Another one here at 855-616-1620. Since you mentioned floating door panels, I have an older wood back door that I love and don't want to replace. However, one lower floating panel has a small thin split on the lower perimeter of the panel. How can this split be repaired? Thank you. Love the show.
It can be a little tough to fix that because it may continue to move in the future. You don't want to just use a soft kind of a filler. You may have to use something more. I would try something more like in the realm of, in car repair, they call it Bondo. In wood repair, there's a wood repair product that acts just like Bondo, where there's a base and then there's a hardener that you mix in. And they sell it. I think a Minwax brand sells a version of that. It's a two-part kind of epoxy thing.
And then it's sandable, right?
Yeah, and try to make it as smooth as you can when you put it in, because that stuff hardens really hard and it's hard to sand. Mm. So you want to get it as smooth as you can before you end up finishing sanding it. That would probably be the best option to try. You probably have the most luck with it. What's happening is one edge of the panel is being pinched where it's inside the groove at the at one side, and the other side is kind of moving, and so the wood is just naturally trying to split because one side's like pulling on the other side in that process.
All right.
So the epoxy is going to be the strongest stuff to try.
Good questions. We have more to get to. Lava rocks, taking pictures, all kinds of fun stuff on hour number two of the Fix It Show. We'll check into the WTMJ Breaking News Center coming up with Elizabeth Linton in as well.
This has been the Fix It Show on WTMJ. Presented by J&B Construction and Siding Unlimited. Advice and opinions expressed during the program are solely that of the hosts or guests and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC. This is the Fix It Show on WTMJ. Advice and opinions expressed during the program are solely that of the hosts or guests and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC.
Need help around the house? Even the handiest do-it-yourselfer needs an extra hand sometimes. During the Fix It Show on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome to hour number two, sponsored by Siding Unlimited and J&B Construction. Jim Riedel in for David Nason today. I'm Dayton Kane. We thank you for all your participation. A lot of good texts and calls coming in today. 855-616-1620 is the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. And I know you're itching, Jim. You're itching to give us a dad joke, so
yeah,
hit
I got
us with one.
Two real quick ones. You know, in honor of the 4th of July, big year this year, turned 50 years, you know. It makes me think of that one song, you know, how life goes by is real short. Ask the country how short of a lifespan 250 years is. Anyways, here's one for you. Why are there no knock-knock jokes about the 4th of July?
Why?
Because freedom rings. Or here's another one. These are from my wife, so.
So they're mom jokes, not dad jokes.
They're kind of mom jokes, yeah. What's the most patriotic tea?
Don't know.
Liberty.
Liberty. Groner foul.
We got the Isaac working Groner the board foul in there. That's a beautiful right sound.
What's your wife's name?
Patty.
All right, Patty. Thanks for your contribution to the show. We appreciate it. Let's get some texts in here. This one says, hello, home built in early 50s, had lava rock used extensively around the foundation. That sounds about right. Needs grading work. Please share info on low-maintenance grading you both have seen or done. How to deal with spacing issue. Bottom of the home is less than 5 inches recommendation from the ground surface. Longevity of grading once in place. Would lawn aeration, removing plugs done beforehand, help prevent water movement towards the home? There's a lot going on here, so let's talk through this. I have the same problem at my house. My house sits very low in my lot. Like, I have maybe 2 inches of my foundation showing above where the dirt is, and I can't go much further down. I'd have to dig out my whole yard
right
to get it to be.
Well, this can be a real hard situation to fix because, yeah, like, I grew up in Milwaukee, and the houses were 10 feet apart, you know, in some neighborhoods, And oftentimes there's like a foot and a half of dirt from the foundation, and then there was a sidewalk running the whole side of the house. And then the next neighbor has the same thing on the other side of the house. So sometimes houses are really close together, like in a city environment. And then you get out in the suburbs and you got a lot of room. And it just turns out that they put the foundation, they didn't build it up one extra block. Years ago, it cost more money. They were saving money. Nowadays, you know, builders build things where it sticks out of the ground, you know, so they plan better for that. You know, a lot of things have changed over time in home building.
Yeah.
So this can be a real hard situation to handle because you don't necessarily have space to do anything with. The idea is, you know, the lava rock does nothing for you. It's a filter.
Yeah.
The water just filters. So I assume that you're asking because the water's coming back to the house and you want to try to get the water away from the house. So what do? You don't want to pile up dirt up to and over the top of the siding. You'll cause rot problems and other problems that turn to mold and rotting and huge expense down the road. So that's out of the question, raising it up. So really, what do you end up with? You got to figure out a way to scrape away that lava rock.
Which is terrible, by the way. Right. Removing lava rock is the worst rock to try to get rid of.
Yeah, it digs
so
in and
jagged sticks.
And
it, yeah, you just can't shovel it like a pea gravel or,
right,
you know, river rock. Or
right.
Anyway.
So, yeah, so try a really huge, giant shop vac, like what they suck the sewers out
there
with.
There you go. That may work, actually.
But yeah, so it's can be a hard thing to do. And so once you get that away, you can kind of see really what the ground is. And maybe, you know, I kind of assume you wouldn't go back with the lava. The lava rock tend to be kind of a bigger chunk of material. So they stick, you know, you get two or three of them and that adds up to like 3 inches of space. Well, you get rid of that. That means you might have 2 or 3 inches to work with to actually bring some soil in there. And so you're going to need to shave away the stuff that's a little farther away to get the water away. If you can't do that, there are things like, what we call French drains, where you actually dig a trench and you put like a, you can put a grate in there with that connects to the pipe. A French drain is basically a pipe that just will move the water away from one area to another area. Sometimes downspouts are done that way, where you bury the downspout under the ground when it gets to the bottom of the downspout that's connected to the house, and then you get to the end of the pipe at the other end, and you have either an outflow or a vent at that end, and because it's pitched down, it can just kind of come out of the top of that other vent. Anyways, so it's going to be a hard thing to do if you don't have the space for it, if you can't go out far enough. You can certainly do this all by hand. An easy way to like break up soil is to rent a rototiller if you don't have one. Yeah. So you can break up the soil a little better, run it the whole length of that side of the house, and then you can sometimes just rake the stuff away from one area to another to move it around. Sometimes you got to shovel some out in a high spot, put it in a low spot. It's probably going to be mostly just repositioning what you have there when you don't have a lot of room to add to it. So
that's what we had to do. We'll talk more through. We're going to take a break. We're going to talk more because there's still more questions in that text to answer, and there's texts that keep coming in. So join the conversation, 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited WTMJ Talk and Text Line. It is the Fix-It Show.
From a leaky pipe to finishing your basement, the Fix-It Show on 620 WTMJ.
That sounds like Posty.
Post Malone going to be at the American Family Amphitheater tonight for Summerfest. Weekend number 2 wraps up today, and then next week we do it all over again, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I don't know. Are you a Summerfest guy? Do you go down
there? I used to be a lot. I did that more often years ago. I guess I'm just a little older now, and I don't like crowds as
much.
Gotcha. So I don't get down there as much.
That voice you're hearing is Jim Riedel. He's in for David Nason this week. We are doing a 4th of July show next week, and we have no guests next week either, so we need people to step up with questions like we're getting today. So let's go through the rest of this text.
I'll come in and I'll ask all the questions.
We were talking about grading. First, they're getting rid of the lava rock with good luck for that, because that's terrible trying to remove lava rock. But we're gonna grade our surface away from the house. So I have the same situation. What I had to do, because all the neighbors' yards feed into mine, I actually had to put a swale through the middle of my yard. So it's not a gully. It's not like you're looking at your culvert in the front yard. It's just a slight depression. So
you direct that water to go somewhere.
So it now goes around the side of the house. I then took a trencher, trenched down the side of the house, and created, so when it rains a lot, I have a river going through my backyard down the side of my house.
Better than in your basement.
Better than in my basement. But I had to do that because I couldn't build up on my house. My house was already as high as I could be on dirt. So I actually had to build dirt away, scoop out further away from the house so the water would run towards the middle of the yard and then direct it the way I needed it to go. So that's what you're looking at. Now, she asked a question about the lawn aeration. And if you do that beforehand, will that prevent water movement toward the home? I don't know.
I'm not quite sure what that means. Because the lawn is grass and there's lava rock, so I'm assuming this is like a decorative area right next to the foundation, and the grass would be a little farther out. Yeah. So I'm not sure if that means. I'm thinking maybe she means by doing the lawn aeration, you get little holes or plugs in the grass,
and maybe
the water will filter in and go down into the soil there.
That's a short-term fix, if anything.
Yeah, it won't handle it on a real downpour. It may be on a light rain. It might help out because it might filter the water in, but that's going to refill with grass too.
Right. So part of the reason you do aeration is actually to try to level out your yard.
Pardon
so you're pulling that soil out so that the yard can kind of level back in and fill those holes and level out. So it may actually, if you do some grading and now you're aerating, you could eventually over time flatten that area out. And I'm seeing that after 6 years of this swale in the backyard, because we've had so much water, that swale's kind of going away after 6 years because it's raising to meet the level of the other grass.
Well, grass, you know, it moves from frost. I mean, you can have a nice flat lawn, and a few years later, you know, it'll be all bumpy because frost hits different spots of the, you know, where moisture's in the ground, and so on. All of a sudden you're riding, if you have a rider lawnmower, you're riding over your grass and you're bouncing all over the place. You know, that's one of the reasons people also do rollers to try to flatten the lawn, and that generally only works when it's really wet, you know, that type of thing. So, but yeah, so I'm not quite exactly sure what she means, but that's kind of what I decipher that to mean. And, but yeah, you definitely want to do what you can to not let the water come towards the house. I mean, that's mentioned in the text, that to prevent water movement towards the home. You'd never want water on the ground surface coming towards your house. That's always a bad thing.
Okay, when we come back, we are facing a heat wave coming up this week. We're going to talk through what we can be preparing for that. If you have questions, 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. It is the Fix-It Show.
Now, back to the Fix-It Show on 620 WTMJ.
Hank Azaria and the Easy Street Band on the U-Line stage at Summerfest today. Bruce Springsteen cover band, right, Isaac?
Yeah, fronted basically by the guy from The Simpsons.
We were just talking how rich that guy must be from all the years of doing voiceovers for The Simpsons. What a job. What a job. Why didn't we do that, Jim?
I know. If I would have only known.
Okay, so we're facing 90s this week. Three or four-day stretch at least. What should we be looking at our house to prevent this? Now, everybody's going to be turning their air conditioners up.
You should turn them on today or tomorrow.
Get the house cooling.
Just to make sure that it's working if you haven't turned it on yet.
Right.
If it doesn't work, you better call someone right away Monday morning, because as the week goes on, they're going to be slammed with stuff that's broken and calls coming in. So that'd be the first thing. You know, there's always guests on who are experts in that area, and I know David always talks about make sure that, you know, you go out and look at the unit outside, make sure nothing's encroaching it as far as plants and whatnot. It's got room around it so the air can flow. Air flows in and goes up usually from the sides, and that's why the outside gets dirty. You can he talks about you know, gently hosing it off. You don't want to be too aggressive, so you could do that just to kind of prepare for it.
One thing you should do on the house, the sides of the house that get the sun consistently, close your drapes. When it's getting to be 90s and that sun's beating in, keep that sun out. That'll help keep the house cooler.
Yeah, I actually think you kind of commented right when I started that if you maybe turn it on a little bit early and get the house cooler, maybe for the next couple of days, get it cool in the house ahead of time, maybe almost where it's uncomfortable, because it's going to warm up and that'll already, you know, put your house in a state of coolness to start. And it's supposed to be all week, so you might gain a couple of days of light use of air conditioning right now to help you in the start of when it starts to warm up. I think that's a good thing.
Instead of trying to cool down the house when it's already 92 degrees, do it slowly and get there. Again, if you're outside, it's 92, 94 degrees and then heat index of a near 100, and you walk in your house and the air conditioning is at 75, it's going to feel nice and cool.
Yeah, the big
thing, everybody's setting their thermostats down to 70, 72, I mean, watch your electricity, because we may be seeing brownouts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
More and more, it seems like electricity is going out instead of staying set where it should be. So,
yeah, and if we start to get a little bit more humid air before it gets warm, because sometimes that happens, you start feeling it.
Oh, yeah.
The air conditioner running at that point is helping you get some of that humidity out, which is also part of the aspect that makes you uncomfortable, is the high humidity in combination with the heat, which is what the heat index is all about. So if you can keep it, you know, where the humidity levels is starting out before the heat comes, that should help.
The other thing you can do, so your fan on your system has a setting. It can be on when it's working, like when the air conditioner kicks on, the fan kicks on, it blows it around, or it can be on all the time, consistently on. That's the way I would have it set for the next week for sure. We have it set that way all the time to keep the air circulating in our house, but definitely now is like when it gets hot like this, you want to keep that airflow movement happening as the heat gets there. So A lot of things you can do to try to kind of resist this heat that's coming in. Obviously,
run through sprinklers.
Run through sprinklers if you want. If you have grandkids, you have an excuse to do it. I've done it this year already, so it's fun. If you're an adult and you haven't run through a sprinkler in a while, it really is. It brings you right back to your childhood.
Like, but when you go outside, put your clothes on because only the bike ride is today.
There are two. Okay, on that note, there are two bike rides going on in Milwaukee today. One is the 47th annual Cafe Hollander Auto One's Downer Classic. That's actually bike races all day long. The other one is the Naked Bike Race. So make sure you're going to the right one. Don't set your chair up thinking you're at one and then find yourself at the other one.
You don't want to be shocked.
Luckily, it's only going to be 72 today. Imagine if this bike ride was happening when it was 94 outside. Oh, that would not be pretty. Not pretty at all. The World Naked Bike Ride. Okay.
Oh, and stay hydrated. Everybody, please stay hydrated. That's a big thing for just...
Drink a lot of water. Yeah. If you know older folks that are kind of on their own, check in with them throughout the next week. Make sure they're doing okay. Even if it's just a, hey, text me a couple times a day and just say, hey, text them back questions just to make sure they're responding.
Yeah. Because sometimes, you know, another thing is if you're home and you know you have a good space in the basement, basements tend to be naturally cooler.
Yeah.
So that would be another place to hang out during a hot stretch for a few days. If you got family room down there, watch TV down there, do some stuff down there. It's, you know, you may not have to have the air conditioning on as hot, you know, as running as extensively and save a little energy that way if you can.
An ice cold bourbon is probably not the solution because.
But it tastes
alcohol
good.
Is a little dehydrating, but yes.
But that's why the ice is in there.
That's why the ice, to offset the bourbon. Jim and I are both bourbon fans, so that's why I bring that up. Anyway, be safe out there this week when it gets this hot. Let's take a break. Go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center with Elizabeth Linton. And good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Dayton.
This is the Fix It Show on 620 WTMJ.
I really want to go see this guy. Pawpaw Rod is this guy's name. I was listening to some music the other day and he came on. I'm like, who is this guy? It was really good. Good stuff. Where is he at? What did you say? The
Briggs and Stratton Big Backyard.
Pawpaw Rod. Go check him out. Sounds like it would be a fun show to see.
I got an old Summerfest story for you.
Okay.
When I was a kid, my mom took me there. They didn't even have all the stages.
Sure.
And she took me to see Helen Reddy.
Helen Reddy?
Yeah, you don't know her?
I don't know who that is.
Oh, well, you'll have to Google her. It's not something that, you know, a young boy usually would go see.
Okay. All right. I'll have to Google.
She was a pretty popular woman. Musician way back.
Gotcha. Vaguely familiar to me, but I don't know that one. Okay, so you used to have a garage organization company.
Yes, I started up one. Yep.
Talk about a couple of things on that. Why do we want to organize our garage, and what are some tricks that people might want to know to help organize a garage?
Well, if you organize your garage, first of all, many people that have driveways and attached garages, it's the first thing you see when you come home because you hit the garage door opener and you enter in your garage, and it's the last thing you see when you're leaving to go to work or somewhere. So if it's just a cluttered mess, there's a certain psychological element that when you come home, it's like this is my front door and I'm walking through a path to get into my house because I saved too much stuff. The garage is a dumping ground.
It is.
It's a space where, you know, a relative dies and it's like, I don't know what to do with this item. I don't want to throw it away. I don't want to, you know, sell it. So you take it to your house and you don't have a place for it. So you stick it in the garage saying, I'm going to deal with that. Then it's 2 years later and you haven't dealt with it and it's still there.
And you're parking your expensive vehicle out in
your driveway. Audi is outside or your BMW. And it's like, you know, if you drive those cars, but
doesn't even have to be that a Toyota Highlander these days aren't cheap.
A pickup truck. Oh my God. 60 grand.
Right.
Anyway, if you got the pickup truck, there's no reason you should have the stuff in your garage because you can haul the stuff away.
Good point.
But the issue is it's just we accumulate things, and the garage ends up always being the dumping ground. I don't know. You know, I bought something new. My kids are young. I have these things. I have another kid on the way. I'm going to keep this thing because my kid isn't using it, but the next one will. Where do I put it? I'm going to shove it in the garage. I'm going to shove it in the basement. So it just ends up collecting, and next thing you know, you got a lot of stuff in your mover. The problem with garages is in our climate, we have winter, we have summer. hotter than heck in the garage in summer, cold in winter. Stuff that's in the garage will get condensation on it. It'll get heat damage. It'll get all sorts of stuff. It'll get mold on it. So the more stuff that's in there and piled up, it's just not good for your stuff. You're going to end up throwing it away because it's going to get ruined anyways. So the best thing is to try to figure out a system that works. Anything that you can get off the floor is the number one thing. You don't want to have stuff sitting on the floor. It makes it harder to use the garage, harder to park in the garage, harder to walk around your cars, and harder to clean the garage. So anything you can get off the floor with a system is great. The system that I worked with was I was a dealer for it. It was a great product. I don't know if they're in the market now, right now anymore, so I'm not going to mention it. It was a system that was specifically able to do two types of storage, boxy types of things, and things that you put in a box like decorations you may not use but once or twice a year. So you want that up and out of the way, up in the upper part of the walls, because you get up towards that ceiling, there's that section around the upper part of your garage. If you go out in your garage and look around, you probably have you can see a lot of wall space up above around the perimeter of the garage. So you take all the longer term storage that's boxed or totes, whatever, and you get it up out of the way. So you use a shelf system for that. There are systems that attach to the walls. There are systems that can go up against the wall, but it's help supported from the roof or from the ceiling. And it's a good loft type of space or a long shelf type of space. Then you have ability to hang things like tools and things like that that you're going to use on maintenance, shovels that you're going to use in winter. And the system that I worked with was adjustable that way. So it had a way of hanging the stuff below the stuff that was the boxes. And it takes a lot of stuff off the floor. And when you get everything off the floor, you're amazed at how easy it is to clean, how easy it is to walk around the garage. But garages are weird spaces because the builders are concentrating on the house and how the house works. The garages have gotten bigger and bigger over the years. So it's three cars, a lot of houses. And one bay is just all storage of stuff, and the two cars are in there. And if they have extra kids with driving, there's a car out in the driveway. So, and those places generally have riders. And if you don't have a shed to put the rider lawnmower in, it's in there. So, there's ways to manipulate stuff and have it seasonal. I'm going to move my snowblower to the front edge where I can get it out easier and the lawnmower goes to the back. And then the summer comes, you put the snowblower, after you service it, like you have a guest on here that says service those things every end of the season, and then you park that in the back and you bring the lawnmower forward. So it's a lot easier to do that when you have the space on the floor to do that. Right. You can maneuver it around. So those are some of the and the way to do it, if you haven't done it in a while and you got a lot of stuff, just plan a day, go quickly through everything, throw out pile, donate pile, keep pile. And that's like any space in a house, you can organize that way. Go through and do those things. As soon as you know the piles, get rid of the throwaway pile as quick as you can. A junk service or if you're garbage.
Go to the dump.
And then the donate stuff, get that out of there too right away as quickly as possible so you don't change your mind on anything. and then you're left. But you see then what you have to store, and that helps you guide you where now how to do your garage stuff.
Right.
There's a lot of products that are on the market in the home improvement store. Some are better than others. But if as much as you can do as a wall mount or a ceiling mount, like a storage loft that hangs from the ceiling for like totes and camping gear that you use a couple times a year, stuff like that. There's hangers that you can hang kayaks off a ceiling that work in interesting ways. And so there's a lot of products out there, and all you have to do is start searching online, and you'll get tons of ideas and sources for that.
Let's wrap this segment up with going back to how you started it. You're leaving your house every day, and that's the last thing you see. When you come home to your house every day, it's the first thing you see because you're opening that garage door and you're going in it. I love that. The psychological impact of having a nice garage is huge. I didn't even think of that.
And most people never use their front door.
I get frustrated when I walk in my garage because it's an old 1941 garage. It's tiny.
Yeah.
It's dark. And I put this home sweet home sign up on the wall as you're walking into the house for right there. It's like the only nice thing in the garage. Yeah. But I'm like, I need something when I'm coming into my house to like make me realize you like your house. Let's go.
People, when I would do a garage, I'd do it usually in a day. They'd be in the house working all day. I'd do what I had planned out ahead of time with them. They'd come out and it'd be like, oh my God, this is amazing. You know,
yeah.
It really is. It can be very transformative.
Yeah.
And it can make a really well, it can really make an improvement on how you live in your house and how you operate your house. You know, David talks about there's nothing that's maintenance free. When you have the ability to have the stuff that you need to do the maintenance easy at hand, you're much more likely to take care of the other things also. If you're stepping and working through your garage to find the thing that you needed to do this maintenance thing outside or whatever, it just makes life easier. So get rid of the stuff you don't need. Get rid of the stuff you're not going to use. Get rid of the, you know, even in your closets in your house, if you haven't worn it in 5 years, get rid of the clothes. You know, that kind of thing. That's the, you kind of have to adopt that. It can be hard for people.
I'm going to start calling you Yoda or Mr. Miyagi. Life lessons from Jim. All right, we're going to take
a
break.
I got a lot of them.
855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. Thanks for listening to The Fix It Show. You better
believe that it's The Fix It Show, exclusively on 620 WTMJ.
Haley Johnson is going to be at the U-Line stage tonight at Summerfest. Is this country or is it adult contemporary?
Americana.
Americana. So many genres out there. Isaac in the producer studio playing our music for us today. Jim Riedel in for David Nason.
Hello.
I'm Dayton Kane. Thank you for joining us. We did get a question as we were talking about organizing the garage. It's a good question. How much weight can I hang from my garage rafters? Can I hang more weight if I hang stuff from the diagonal rafters instead of the horizontal? And so are they talking about the actual roof rafter? I don't want to hang stuff from that, do you?
I think the garage is probably open to the roof above. It doesn't have like a drywall ceiling right. Like some garages have. So you have what wall ties or joists, ceiling kind of joists going across, and then you have the rafters coming down and exposed. The answer is it depends. You can hang some stuff off the rafters. In some cases, they could be stronger than the horizontal joists because sometimes the joists are spanned across an entire 20-some feet.
Sure, sure.
If it's an older house, there's sometimes only like several of those in there, so they're like 4 feet apart or 6 feet apart. And so the more weight you put on those, the more they're going to sag. Wood tends to be very strong, and you can kind of gauge it by attaching something and putting on it, and if you see any movement, like it's starting to sag, you should probably rethink that. The rafters, you got to be careful about the rafters, how you attach stuff or what you bolting or screwing into it, because you don't want to damage those. Those are holding up your roof. But the rafters are on a slight pitch usually, so the load is actually directed down to the supporting walls a little bit more directly. So those could be a good option. If you're in any question at all, you know, it could be good to ask a contractor or a friend that knows some stuff or a home inspector like David, you know, those kinds of things. It's, you know, oftentimes better to try to get an opinion like that than to have a catastrophe where you put something up there, you park your nice Mercedes in there and,
Your whole roof collapses, and then all of a sudden
you're replacing a windshield or a hood or something like that. So you know, common sense can rule, but I generally didn't have much problem with the stuff that I attached. I worked in some old garages. I worked in new garages. I worked in garages that had the ceiling drywalled and you were drilling through and actually attaching to trusses or floor joists that were a room above it, stuff like that. So, it's easy for me to analyze it because I go in there and I've been doing this all my life, so I kind of have an idea what's going to work and what's not. I understand many people won't have that. So if in doubt, try to get some advice.
Okay. Another quick question before I go to break. It says, I'm interested in how you got the grass to grow where you put in the swale. They're talking about what we were talking about before. If the water flows to the swale, would grass seed wash away? Yeah, it, especially with the kind of rains we've been getting lately. But if you put the grass seed down and you put the straw down over the top of that, and most rains aren't going to wash that away completely. Some of the storms that we've had lately, the one we had back in April or the one back in August, obviously, if you just put that down and that storm hits, you're going to be reseeding and
It usually establishes in a couple of weeks. So if you try to pick a time where it's not super rainy season and plant it, and then by the time it's all established.
But you also want some rain because you're going to have to water it. You're going to have to get it to grow. So it's just
unfortunate. When it's fresh seed, though, it's better almost to control the water, so watering it, then have rain come and you don't know what it's going to be, and then it would wash the seeds away. But once they established and you got full grass there, the water just flows right over the top of the grass. That's
exactly
great.
Good question, though. 855-616-1620. If you have questions, we have one segment left. It is the Fix It Show on WTMJ.
Making sure your honey-do list doesn't turn into a honey-what-did-you-do list. It's the Fix It Show on 620 WTMJ.
Sponsored each week by Siding Unlimited and J&B Construction. The band you're hearing right now, is a band or is it a solo artist?
I think it's an artist.
Maris, playing at the T-Mobile stage today at Summerfest, weekend number 2. I'm Dayton Kane.
I'm Jim Riedel.
Jim Riedel in for David Nason, and we are taking your calls and texts at 855-616-1620. And somebody chimed in on you there.
Yeah, someone said they are rarely designed for storage loads. I think he referring to the diagonal rafters, and that's true, that most of that stuff is not designed for that.
If you put too much weight up on your garage rafters and the spanning ones, you can start seeing the roof start to concave because it's just too much weight.
Some garages have trusses, you know, so there's a bottom cord on the truss, they call it. That's the horizontal piece at the bottom, and then the slopes go up. And oftentimes those trusses are not rated for storing things. So you don't usually put stuff in them or on top of them unless they're designed for that. But many of the loads that are in garages that for stuff, unless you really have a heavy type of item, you're usually not going to exceed what is the safety factor. Sure. But like I said, you should, you know, if in doubt, you should really get some advice.
One thing you should never do, and I've seen this in a couple garages, when they go to put the garage door opener in, they cut some of those to get it to work right. Don't ever do that. Don't ever cut those
horizontals. We call them wall ties when they go all the way from one side to the other, or ceiling joists.
Don't ever cut those. Oh, my goodness. Okay, another one says, good morning. Wondering what fan setting to use with the AC on our on or auto. Also, what is good temperature setting, especially when the 90-degree day is coming? Would 70 be good? Low 70s. So we answered that earlier, but I keep mine on. I don't do auto. Auto only kicks on when the air kicks on. On will keep it running all the time, and that keeps the air circulating. And so that cold air and that heat, because heat rises, right?
Yep.
So continuing to circulate that air will keep the air cooler.
And then it runs through your filter.
And it runs through the filter. Right. It's good for you. 90-degree days, if you can stand 75 on a 90-degree day, again, when you walk in from outside, that's going to feel very refreshing. Maybe not sleeping at night. You're going to want to bump down to lower 70s. Yeah. But
The higher the setting, the less difficult the AC has to work. The lower setting, you put it on in a really hot day,
it'll run
that thing's going to be running nonstop. And not that that's a bad thing necessarily. It's just, you know, what are you comfortable with, and you know, are you worried about energy savings and that type of thing?
And what about the grid? We're all pulling 70 degrees in our house when it's 92, 94 out.
Wait till all the data centers come online.
Oh, We're not getting into that. All right. So, Jim, thank you for filling in for David.
It was fun. I enjoyed it.
You did a great job. I can't wait for the next time David's. Oh, wait. I hope David's not listening. Can't wait for David not to be here again. No. You did a swell job. Lots of great interaction, too. We appreciate when people call in and text in. It always makes the show better. What do you have going on for 4th of July? Any big plans?
You know, I'm not sure yet. I haven't thought that far ahead.
It's a week away.
It is my favorite holiday. I really enjoy fireworks. It's something that I grew up with on the lakefront as a kid. You know, whole family would go down there, so I've always enjoyed fireworks. I don't even know. We don't really even do that in Milwaukee anymore, right? Drones or something.
Yeah, now there's drones and all kinds of stuff. But after we get off the air, you're gonna have to give me your address so I can come by Jim's little bar. And
I do a little happy hour in my driveway. I started it last summer on Wednesdays, and everybody's asking me to start it again. So I'm preparing my driveway, and I move things out there as certain furniture items, and I set up a mobile bar, and I call it my little free happy hour.
There you go. I need the address and I need the time. I'll be there. All right. Always good. Isaac always doing a good job as well. And coming in next, Rose Gray's in Ireland. Colleen Allsberg coming in for the Fox World Travel Show. She's walking up as I say her name. Say her name and she appears. Thanks for listening to WTMJ.
This has been the Fix-It Show on WTMJ. Presented by J&B Construction and Siding Unlimited. Advice and opinions expressed during the program are solely that of the hosts or guests and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC.